again, and all power to the people for that, because the people are the writers of all history, world history, and they've simply added another page to the book.
Hey everyone, and welcome back. This is the We Out Here X-Fact Podcast. I am your host, A.S. Turner, and I am here with my main man,
J.K. Hobson, comedian, content creator, and host.
Exactly. And guys, we're going to be talking about exactly why this podcast is called the X-Fact Podcast, why we are expats, and why we chose the expat life, right? The very first question that a lot of people would ask us is, why did we leave America? Why did we leave, allegedly, the greatest country on earth? And that's
according to a lot of Americans, you know.
Yeah. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I necessarily believe that, but that is the popular saying. So for me personally, leaving America, it was never really about a desire to leave America as it was the desire to experience a different culture, you know, see different places in the world, and basically have like a personal experience with some of those stories that I read about in, you know, National Geographic, or, you know, things that I've seen in media. Like, I actually wanted to go to the places where these events were happening, where these stories were being told. And so that was pretty much my reasoning for leaving America. I finally had the opportunity to go and teach in South Korea at a kindergarten, which turned out not to be the best gig in the world. But it was
teaching kindergarten wasn't the best gig in the world.
No, what? It was not. I know it's crazy to say. It's crazy for me to even, you know, have those words leave my mouth. But no, it was not the greatest job in the world.
Arnold Schwarzenegger loved it in Kindergarten Cop. I don't know what your problem is. Yeah, he looked like he was having a great time.
He probably got paid a very, very nice salary for doing so.
Yeah.
And probably had an expiration date too. All right, get these kids out of here.
Oh yeah. And also, he wasn't having a good time. Maybe you didn't see it. He was like, the kids are driving him crazy, as kindergartens are wont to do, you know?
Yes. But that led me to doing other things in South Korea. And that's pretty much the first country I went to. From there, the expat life was history. What about you, JK?
I'm actually a refugee from the United States. I actually flipped now. I originally came to Vietnam specifically. Well, I had been in a band for a bunch of years, and during my time in the band, we did a lot of touring in the United States, and we had the opportunity to go to Japan. So we did a show. We did a music festival in Japan called the Independence Day Music Festival.
Where in Japan?
In Shinjuku, in Tokyo. Yeah. And that was my first time in Asia, and it was really too short. So it was always in the back of my mind, like, I want to spend more time there. And then after the band broke up and I returned to university, I took part in a study abroad program, and I decided that I wanted to teach you Vietnamese. I wanted to learn Vietnamese history. I wanted to study Vietnamese history for a lot of particular reasons, which I might get into later. But I did a study abroad program. I lived in Hue, Vietnam for a couple of months, and I really fell in love with Vietnam. And so when I went back to the States, I really wanted to figure out how to experience Vietnam for just a little while longer. So I applied for a Fulbright scholarship, and I won the Fulbright. And then I came back here to do the Fulbright in My Tho, Vietnam for 1 year. And during that year, you know, it was 2016. A lot of things were going on politically. A lot of things had been going on in the United States for a few years before that, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests and movement really started to develop. And then in 2016, about 5 months into my stay in Vietnam, Donald Trump won the election to be president of the United States. And at that point, I just decided that I would remain in Vietnam. So it wasn't that I left Vietnam necessarily because of the political, what I considered upheaval happening in the United States. But I decided that I was really happy where I was. I really loved it in Vietnam. I was just learning about a new place, learning about myself, because that's one thing that happens when you're taken out of the context that you've grown up in, is you really get to find out who you are. It's easy to define yourself when you've been around the same people and in the same culture, because you just like, you find yourself to relating to the things and people that are around you. But once you're removed from that context and put into a totally new one, you start discovering like really interesting things about yourself. And I think maybe closer to who you really are. And that journey wasn't done for me. And so that was another part of the reason that I stayed. But definitely what was going on in the United States was also a factor. That's why I joke around and say that I was a refugee, you know, but.
I mean, there's something really interesting that you brought up. Being an expat helped you discover who you are, because that's one of the benefits that I found as well. Like being abroad, being outside of your comfort zone, being away from those, you know, that you were comfortable with, you're forced to kind of chart a new path for yourself and figure out, you know, what is it that I really want? And what I found out was the things that I was chasing in the United States weren't necessarily things that I was chasing for my own desire or benefit. It was because this is what I thought people wanted me to do. This is what people told me I should do. This is what people told me I'm good at. And so being an expat was a time for me to figure out, well, what is it that I want for myself? What type of life do I want to live? And so it's interesting that we both had that same thought process.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. She's actually Russian and French. And she was talking about visiting the United States from Eastern Europe. And she said, look, I don't want you to be offended. You know, I was ready to be offended. Like, what is she going to say? You know? And then she was like, she could basically, to paraphrase, she couldn't see what the big deal was. You know, that people freak out about going to the United States and the American dream. And then she was there. She was like, okay, so there's stores. To be fair, she was in Florida. No shade to Florida, by the way. I love my Florida people. Shout out to Afzal and Born Free Biker Bar in Tampa, Florida.
Trick I'm not Daddy. Saying,
man, Trick Daddy. Who's in the news? So you might want to tune into a later episode of the Expat Podcast, where we talk about the finer points of Trick Daddy's proclivities, which really say more about his girlfriends than it does about him. But anyway, hey. We digress.
No judgment. Yeah. No judgment here.
So, but she was just basically like, "Oh, okay, this is what," and I guess she really. Was more tripping off of the like just the capitalist aspect of it, which capitalism is fine, does a lot of great things, you know. I'm not trying to have that argument, but just when it just leads to you walking around, it's like another donut shop, you know. Did they need to put another Cracker Barrel right here? I guess she was, you know, and you know, she's Russian and French, you know what I'm saying? So there's that too. The French have a different idea about what culture is, but I couldn't combat that, you know, where I was like, yeah, okay, so there's stores, you know, great, there's a house, you know. It just, I feel like I can understand how somebody would be expecting more from this place that calls itself the greatest country in the world. And yeah, jazz music came out of there, but you don't hear jazz music playing out of every, you know, every store, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, yeah, I get what you're talking about. I mean, I would say probably her being, you know, part French has a lot to do with that. Oh, this is your greatest nation. This is first world. But the point about donut shops is a big point, because one of the things I discovered when I first left the States, when I first left, I was close, if not more than 300 pounds. And I haven't touched 300 pounds since I left. Like, I haven't gone anywhere near that weight. I've been heavy, I've been close to it, but I haven't necessarily touched it. And so the diet in the States It's one of the first things that I came to a realization about. Like, we eat a lot, and we eat a lot of stuff that can make you gain weight very quickly in a very short time span. So it's probably one of the first things that I realized when I first left. My first 6 months in South Korea, I lost a lot of weight, and a lot of it was just revolved around the diet. Did you have a similar experience?
Well, I grew up in New York City, and then I lived in Los Angeles for 14 years before coming out here. So, and they're not, I mean, although diet can be heavy, I feel like when I did a lot of traveling with the band is when I saw the places. Like, I was, you know, for the first time I was in the South on the regular and in the Midwest eating at Denny's like almost daily and being like, damn, this is a lot of food, man. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And then also maybe not being so conscious of that until I started seeing a lot of the people, you know, and being like, wow, here's a fat family, you know? Because you see fat individuals, you know, but when you see like fat dad, fat mom, fat five-year-old, it's like, how is this five-year-old obese? This kid doesn't have a job. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're doing that.
Like, and it's funny you bring that up, because fat shaming is like a big deal in the United States right now. Mm. Like, you know, people, you know, hey, you're shaming me because I'm fat. Whereas like, you know, when I first went abroad, like for example, in South Korea, like if you're fat, they will openly tell you, hey, you fat, you are a fat person. You are right. Fat.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not an insult to your character. It's not as, I think if you call somebody fat in the United States, it's like more like a judgment of their entire character. Mm-hmm. Whereas they will say like, hey, you're fat, you don't have any hair. People will talk about like physical attributes that you possess that might be, you know, other than ordinary, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I don't think it's supposed to be assailing your character. But also, along with this culture of like not fat shaming, but there's also like some people are fat and that's fine. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, but the thing that did alarm me is when I see a child that is not making their own choices, you know, or I don't think should be making their own choices about like necessarily, you know, parents should have something to do with that. And the child is on a trajectory towards getting somewhere that is going to have detrimental long-term effects. You know, it just surprised me. It just wasn't what I was used to, you know?
Yeah, and you do see that in other countries as well, where especially other developed nations, where you see this kind of McDonald'sization of their food industries. Like, for example, there's in every subway station, you know, whether it's in Korea, or whether Japan or China, you're going to see a McDonald's. You're going to see a McDonald's at a major station. It's in the subway. Yeah. I mean, wow. I saw McDonald's, like there was like three McDonald's in my neighborhood in Korea when I lived there.
Wow.
So I could always get a Big Mac whenever I wanted to. And so you, along with that, you see a lot of kids there starting to become obese. You see this rising obesity rate. And that's something we don't talk about enough. But want to get into some other experiences that we had abroad. For me, one of the first things I realized as well when I went abroad was that first world privilege, man. What I didn't know what that was. What was it like? What are the benefits to being American? What is it like? And then as soon as you leave, well, now this is back in 2012. I don't know if this is still the case now, but yeah. I think it's kind of changed a lot since then. But back in 2012, America still had a lot of popularity around the world. And, you know, to be called an American, oh, you're an American. Oh, you're an American. Wow, you're from the States. Wow.
Yeah.
Like it's like that's the first time you kind of feel that. Whereas when I was in the States, you know, I never knew what it was to be Black American. I didn't know necessarily what it meant to be American. What were the actual benefits of being American? You learn that in more ways than one. when you leave?
I'm remembering, this is so funny, I didn't even mean to get into this. One of my students, he's like 9 years old. He's like an especially like outgoing and just opinionated. He's a funny kid. I really got to like him, you know, but he was a situation when he showed up in the class. Like immediately this kid shows up and the entire dynamic of the class changed. Ended up being in a good way. But I remember his second day in the class, he was leaving and he was like, he's like, where are you from? But almost like in that, like if you were in LA, you know what I mean? It was like, you know, man, I'm mess shit. I'm with the rolling 50s. You know what I mean? It was like really rolling 60s. But it was like aggressive, especially from a 9 year old, you know. He's like, where are you from? And I was like, I'm American, I'm from New York, you know, and it was like almost like, I'm from New York, man. What's up? And he was like, oh, okay. I thought you were from Bangladesh or something. My parents said thought you were from Bangladesh. Oh. And I was really like kind of, you know, I tend not to get shocked by racism.
Yeah.
I tend to be like, you know, in this, but I wasn't ready for it from a 9 year old. You know what I'm saying? Because I couldn't have the conversation with him until later. But so what about us from Bangladesh? Ain't nothing wrong with being from Bangladesh. Like, what is this attitude about? You know what I mean? But it was like, oh, you're American, you know, which is wild, man. You know, and so you got to stop and think about it sometimes. Yeah. Although it's not right, you know, and it comes with a lot of, you know, it's problematic, but, you know, but there are advantages and, you know, and it has nothing to do with anything that I had anything to do with, you know what I mean? Exactly. My parents just happened to have sex in America, having to be born in America. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And when people talk about privilege, you know, people normally get all up in their, you know, get their underwear gets all up tight, you know, like as if someone just accidentally shoved something up your ass, you know, unexpectedly. It's like, no, privilege is basically you benefit from something that you had no effort in actually helping to come to realization. Like you didn't necessarily earn it. It's something that, you know, it's just a consequence of the status that you have. And there's to a certain degree, people have different elements of privilege, right? Whether it's that you're a man in your society, or whether, you know, I'm an American walking around Mozambique. There are built-in privileges to that. And it doesn't make you less of a person to acknowledge them. I know firsthand visas. When it comes to visas, trying to get a visa to go somewhere, trying to get a visa to go to Europe, is a lot easier for me to do that than it would be for someone from Cambodia or Vietnam. And so not realizing that and not acknowledging that, I just think we're doing a great disservice. But what are some other experiences you've had regarding this? Because I, you know, of course, when I talk about first world privilege, people are going to be like, oh, you didn't experience racism. It's like, no, I didn't say that. Of course.
We're still black. Okay. Yeah. So it's still, it comes with a lot of stuff. Because people will do to us, like, I mean, we get the thing that Asian Americans get, you know, because Asian Americans, people be like, you know, say, so where are you from? They'd be like, you know, Pasadena, come on, you know what I mean. Where are you from? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we get a bit of that too, even though, you know, it's possible that our ancestors could have been in the United States for the past 400 years. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, there's a way that whiteness has been equated. Like when you think of an American, most people, at least in this country, will think of a white man specifically, yeah. Right? If they think of an American, they will think of a white man. That is their episode. So then we are, you know, so we still, there is still a stratification by which, you know, Americans are viewed. So yeah, we're still black, man, you know?
And I would say even among that analogy of what Asians experience and Asian Americans experience within America, I would say holds true among black Black Americans among the African diaspora, because we're treated a lot better than people from Nigeria, you know, or from Angola, or even people from Jamaica. So you even have that where you're one of the good blacks. So yeah, it's
never mind if you're from New York City. Oh my God, we get treated like it's you guys created rap. Thank you so much, you guys. That's fantastic.
Good on
it
you guys.
It just doesn't end the intersectionality.
And intersectionality. There we go.
I had to picture. I had to draw a picture of it. I did a Venn diagram with my hands. Intersectionality. Yeah. It's real, man.
Yeah, exactly. And there's things with that. So let's go ahead and talk about some things we learned or picked up on culturally from some of the places we lived in during our time as expats. For example, for me, like, we have this belief in America, you know, after 18, that is, after you turn 18, at that point, age is not a significant factor. In terms of how much respect you should give someone. It's kind of this idea you should respect people equally. Whereas, and for example, Korea, China, and even Vietnam, age has varying levels of respect that commands. You know, and Korea is very hierarchical, where, you know, even in amongst friends, the oldest friend is the person that commands the most respect. You even have certain words and formalities you have to use when speaking to someone who's older than you. So I thought that was interesting. Another big point that I found interesting was the value of education. How much money parents spend on education, like whether it's Japan, South Korea, China, even Vietnam, like there is a united front on the idea that education is the path out of poverty. But here's the deal, though. When I say value of education, I don't mean like the value put on students actually learning and digesting the material, expanding their minds. See, that's what people think. And this is the thing, you know, because this comes up whenever people talk about Black Americans and Asian Americans in the States when it comes to affirmative action. The value of education that I'm speaking of is basically the amount of money that these centers make and the amount of money these parents are willing to spend. The whole point of this is test scores.
Yeah.
The whole point of this is test scores. And it's basically like a... it's like the drug market, man. You have illegal schools running, illegal tutors, people making money on the side, slinging lessons. I mean, it's...
hey, you want an English book? Come here, kid. You want a diploma? Come here, kid.
Hey, you want some extra math classes?
Yeah. You like... give you a diploma, you get the money, and give them the handshake with the exchange, the money and the diploma. You're like, all right, peace.
It'd be women out there doing that stuff, man. Like, hey, my son needs, you know, a little help. Something, I give you a little something. He's like, all right, I help him out. What grade he in? 7? All right, I got you.
there's so many levels to that, man. Some of it I won't even get into because I still work for educational institutions and I've seen some stuff. Yeah, it's just it for a lot of people, it's just about the paper. If you have this thing, to the detriment of a lot of students, to the detriment of the learning experience of students. Because I've taught in universities here in Vietnam, in Saigon, and got in front of some students that were English majors and started talking a little bit and realized they didn't have an idea what I was saying. They didn't have a clue. English majors, you know? And meanwhile, I taught 7-year-olds that spoke better English than these university students. And what I came to realize is a lot of these students, they paid a lot of money to get in these programs, the point of which is to get the degree.
Yeah.
But it just felt like the priority wasn't on the actual attaining of language proficiency.
Yeah.
Which is just a fancy way of saying, you know, a lot of people are paying their ways to get diplomas.
Yeah. And that's a big thing because Asia is held as this, you know, part of the world that's figured education out. And I'm like, I think you guys need to look a little bit closer. That's not to say that there aren't highly intelligent, highly skilled teachers, professors, students out in this part of the world. There are. That by no means is that not true. What I'm saying is there's another element. Both things can be true. There's another element to look at here. And that is the corruption within the education system and the fact that so much of it is made around making money to drive up students' test scores, not actually to drive up their understanding and their digestion of the material that they need to be learning. And so that's a huge component. I saw it in, and I've seen it in nearly every country I lived in Asia, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's China, and when I was in Shanghai, or in South Korea. In South Korea, they have the students take this English test to go into high school, where they're just pulling things from doctorate essays and like quizzing these students on these very high English level questions that would confuse even like a native speaker. And yet, you have students that pass this test to go into college, but that doesn't mean they can necessarily speak English, right? Or actually communicate using English. And that's a big issue. Yet you have English language centers that make bank to pass the test.
Have you noticed also, like, there's a lot of cheating?
Yeah.
That was wild to me, man. And I don't know. I mean, people cheat everywhere, you know, but you know, when I went to university, for example, if you were caught plagiarizing something, you were in some serious trouble. That is like your entire academic career is now at risk if you're caught plagiarizing stuff. And I see it all the time. And it's like it's supposed to be treated as a slap on the wrist. I get irate. I get really like, I might take it a little bit too personally when I catch somebody cheating in one of my classes, because part of it is like you're cheating yourself. But part of it is like, do you think I'm stupid? Do you think I believe you wrote this? You know what I mean? So like part of it is like me taking it personally, but part of it is also like, yo, I'm trying to show you something here that's gonna help you. You know, I turned into such a new person. I'm
sticking. And you know you're only mad because, you know, mama and daddy, they didn't give you your cut, man. That's the real problem.
They didn't give my cut. You didn't have to cheat. You could have just paid me. And then he wouldn't have to be sneaking in the cheat sheet. I turn a blind eye. Cut me in, man.
I'm joking, obviously. I'm a respect.
Hey, sometimes you got to pay to win, man. Don't hate the player, hate the game. But no, yeah, I cheating, like, they, you know, they moved the SAT. Like, you can't take the SAT in mainland, like in Korea, for example, right? You have, they moved it to Guam, so they got to go to Guam. And also some of the graduate tests have done the same. Like they moved it to places where, you know, they have better control over the testing materials and administering the test. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is a problem. Again, something else that a lot of people don't want to talk about. But when, again, it a lot of people like, a culture thing. No, it's not a culture thing. When you create this environment where the number one pathway out of poverty is through education. Well, what you do is you create this situation where there's this hyper competitiveness to succeed in education. There's cheating in sports, right? People cheat all the time in sports. Cheating is basically you trying to get some type of edge over everyone else, right? Parents being able to send their kids to these expensive language centers and other school subject centers, like, for example, math academies and things of that nature, you know, that's giving their kids an edge that other parents who can't afford the tuition to those places, they don't have. Their children won't have that edge, right? And so that's all it is. And so you create this hyper-competitive environment, you're going to have people like, yo, I got to win by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. And then that's really what it is, whereas in the States, there's several different paths. out of poverty. You don't just have education. You have some people who make it big being in the rap game. You have some people who make it big by starting their own business and just being an entrepreneur and just working hard and building up a good customer base. That's one thing I have seen in the States versus living abroad, where you're a little bit more limited in how you can get out of your current economic situation if you are a local living in these countries. And so that way, I understand, it makes sense. But let's talk about real quick, we're not going to go too much into this, but for the next 5 minutes, let's talk about some fun stuff of our experiences abroad. just real quick, people talk about dating and how difficult it would be to be in relationships with someone who doesn't speak the same language as you, or they're from a different culture.
Like, this is loaded just the way you're saying that, but man, people complain and you can't listen to somebody talk, like you want to hear somebody talking or something. What are you talking about?
That's exactly where I'm going. Yeah, if I can't understand you, I don't have to listen to you. No, but what I was gonna say was, you have these people who say, basically ask questions, how is it, dating wise? And I can say that as an expat, what happens for you, especially if you're a man, this is not necessarily true for women. It depends on the place they're going to and the race of the woman and the nationality. But as an American who happens to be a Black American, you have the options of women who are also from other countries as well, who consider themselves expats. And you also have women who are local, right? There's, of course, a desire to want to know about American culture, or at least a desire to, hang out with someone from America. And things aren't like they used to be. Like back many years ago, American culture is pretty much well known. People have YouTube, they watch, they have Instagram. I've girls love doing the Cardi B. I can't do that shit. I know girls who could do the Cardi B. Okay, that's probably not even a Cardi B thing, but
Vietnamese women know how to whip in Nay Nay. Yeah. It's just, our culture is ubiquitous.
Yeah, you got twerking lounges, in every country, Korea, China, everybody's twerking now. Everyone has a twerking competition. So it's when they see
the results may vary.
Yeah, it's not just going to be the same, guys. It's but when they see us, they see us more as a representation of the media they consume. That can be good and that can be bad. Earlier we were talking about racism. Of course we experience racism. You have negative images of Black people that are out there, so of course you're going to have negative perceptions of us. But on the flip side of that, we talked about this in our porn podcast, you also have positive perceptions, and those help out too. And I feel like recently, when I first went abroad, 2012, things for us were, we're starting to turn a corner. And I would say around 2015, it just seemed like, all right, Black dudes are popular now. They're in. I don't know that now. Again, okay. That depends on the country you're in. But I feel like seeing us a lot more in the media, especially, after Black Panther, RIP to Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of had this, there was a lot more positivity given towards us, not necessarily all of us, but to a certain degree more so than there was in the past. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, maybe that started with Obama. I would say even before Black Panther, especially here in Vietnam, people seem to have very good feelings about Obama, even though I don't think they agreed with a lot of his politics, but I think they liked his character, which is a lot of Americans the same way, actually, But him being the president for the world, I think, gave an example of a kind of Black person that exists, right? But that they wouldn't have been privy to earlier, Like, I remember going to Cambodia in 2015 and people being like, Obama, and it was like and they were like, show me their skin. Like, yo, I'm Black too. I'm Black, which Cambodian people are not Black. They have brownish skin, But it was like, yo, I'm like you. You know what I mean? Which was interesting.
So I think, and Obama came here and ate bún cha, which is a Hanoian food. It's a Northern Vietnamese food, which is delicious. But he ate that with Anthony Bourdain. And when he did that, mm-hmm. Vietnamese people went crazy. Like, yo, he went to Hanoi and he ate bún cha. Even though I got word on the street from people I know in the embassy that he didn't really eat Vietnamese bún cha because he did not eat the food from that restaurant. He could not eat the food from that restaurant because if something happened to him as a result of eating that food, it would have been an international incident. So he had his chefs come in with their own ingredients, look at how to make it and make his food side by side with the, but anyway, total side note, but that's
like, that's actually pretty dope though. That's a,
right. It's good to know, right?
Little tidbit.
Yeah. So yeah. Because of that, and then, yeah, of course, because of Black Panther, you know, and there's a whole movement of Black intelligentsia, you know, whether you're talking about Jordan Peele or Issa Rae, and I'm not saying that everybody, you know, all Vietnamese people know who these people are, but I think that wave is being felt. So there is an idea that there are different kinds of Black people besides, I don't know, DaBaby. DaBaby is just going to be the stand-in for if we just like, you know, we just want to break somebody up, you know, or you know, some other rapper or athlete. You know, that I think there's more of an awareness that we're multi-layered now.
Exactly. And I think that has also more of us going abroad, I think lends to more people having experiences with us and them saying, oh, wait, you're not like what I saw on TV. Oh, okay.
Right.
Oh, you're just a regular person.
Or, God damn, you are extraordinary, sir. I had no idea that they made you an extraordinary.
Well, yeah. That's for the other topic in conversation. We'll go, if you guys want to hear more about our experiences, you know, comment in a chat and maybe we'll do another podcast down the line. But basically, there's also this thing called an expat cheat code where you kind of have a higher quality of life in many ways than you would if you were in the States. You have a more stress-free life, less anxiety, and certain, depending on where you are. And so that's, I feel like that's what a lot of us has found is this expat cheat code where you kind of operate, you can get the best of the United States without getting the worst element or trying your best to minimize how that would affect you.
I think that's absolutely right. I think I would take it a step further and to say as Black Americans, we have a double cheat code. So the first cheat code is being expats, more likely than not, making more money than the average local person does, right? Like our dollar, our value on the market, we're seen as being more valuable, even if a lot of us are just mediocre, right? So we have that. But then I think having experienced hardship as Black folks, as Black Americans, that it can cultivate a certain kind of resilience. And that kind of that resilience makes it a lot easier to deal with adversity, the adversity that comes with, you know, being a stranger in a strange land. Because I felt like a stranger in a strange land in the country that I was raised in, you know what I mean? That I was born and raised in, you know? Well, I was born in Puerto Rico, which is a part of the United States, but I lived in the continental United States since I was 2 years old and have many times felt like I do not belong. So being used to that, and coming out and living in Vietnam, the moments when I feel like a stranger or the moments when I feel like there's like some form of culture shock, it's a lot easier for me to roll with. So I think that's like kind of a double cheat. You know, this is kind of like the upside of marginalization is it makes you a little bit tougher.
Yeah, a big point, and this be our final point on this. You know, I remember when I first went to South Korea, I was at a bar and I was having a conversation with a group of white expats. And by having the conversation, I mean, I was listening to them talk while I was drinking on my beer. And all of a sudden the topic switched to racism. And, you know, they start talking about the racism that they were experienced from Koreans, you know, at their place of work or, you know, just in general. And a lot of the things they were talking about, you know, I was listening. I was like, the things I had to go through on at least a weekly basis back in the States, especially living in Texas. Yeah. I mean, that was just life. And so they turned to me and they were like, oh, you know, what do you think? And I was still drinking, so I like had to catch myself.
Wasn't ready.
Well, I think you guys are experiencing a microcosm of my daily existence. Yeah. Because not only do I have to go through those same things here, I've had to go through those similar instances in the States. And so, you know, at least for me, the benefit is I'm in a country, I'm in a foreign country, so I can kind of just like let it kind of just roll off my shoulders. Whereas one of the things that makes it harder, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, transitioning, one of the things that makes it really hard when I look back on my time in America and I look at America now, that's my country. Right. I was born here. And I felt like a foreigner. And, you know, I'm abroad as a foreigner, but I feel more comfortable. So that's the answer to the question. Why did you?
Okay. All right. You ain't going to talk about infrastructure?
Well, all right. We're going to get back into that. But the next thing we got to talk about is how do we, as Americans, you know, we're abroad. I've been abroad for about 8 years now. So with this time abroad, how do we see the U.S. from the outside looking in? For me, it looks like the fall of Rome.
You know what? The thing is, it's funny that you say that, because I think one of the things that Americans, like something that is so innate, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, is there is this feeling America's gonna make it. You know what I mean? Like no matter what, it's just somehow like this is the way our stories are written. You know what I mean? And even if we're in the middle of it, by the end of it, we're gonna win. Whatever that means. I'm saying this is a feeling America is gonna win, you know? But I feel like more than ever, I felt like, man, maybe this isn't supposed to work. Maybe this project, and you know, the more hopeful part of me says that there are enough intelligent people, enough compassionate people, enough people of sense and wisdom. And those are the people that really represent the best of us, you know? But sometimes it feels like an uphill struggle. And sometimes I feel like, you know, who says that's supposed to work? I mean, empires fall all the time. So I can't say whether, you know, I have friends that are like, oh, they give it another 10 years. You know, I'm not that cynical. But looking at what's going on and looking at the kinds of conversations that need to be had, apparently, you know, this regressive shit going on all the time.
The fall of Rome thing, the reason why I say it is because of stories like that. But also, like, I lived in China. Like, I've seen what they're capable of. There is no city in America that looks like Shenzhen. We don't have any city that's on par with that city. We don't have any city that has the transportation that cities like Shanghai and Beijing have. We just don't.
Do they have rats dragging a slice of pizza through the subway? I don't think so, sir.
Well, they have rats.
How's the pizza? Dragging other shit. Feet of sweat. Oh my God, they're catching up to us.
Some of them will drag you if you lay there long enough. That's a country that has a unified purpose, right? They have one government, one centralized government. The government knows what it needs to do to advance the nation, and they're set on doing that. And for the majority of the population, there are a lot of people who do not like the president. There's a lot of people that don't like the government. They don't like how repressive or oppressive it is. However, the trains run on time, and the quality of life in China as a middle-class Chinese person, you know, and in some ways you live a comfortable life. Now there are certain freedoms that you would want, but however, if you're not aware of those freedoms, or if you don't care about those freedoms, then again, there are people who want different things in life, and there are people who have a different viewpoint of the government. The Chinese, to a certain degree, have been conditioned. But to a certain degree, some of those people have lived in other countries and they say, you know what? I like the efficiency of the Chinese government. They get stuff done, right? And as long as you don't cross them, you're free to do business. As long as you don't cross them. And so you see the growing nationalism. You also see what the country is capable of. You look at the states and you see the kind of arguments we're having, the divisions we have. Our divisions have division. And on top of that, you know, I thought 2020 was a year of progress. Let me say that again in a different way. Let me rephrase. I thought there was going to be progress from 2020. I thought 2020 was going to be a year in which, all right, we woke up and realized we need to change things. And then, you know, 2021 came around and it was like, you know, nope, not only are we not going to progress, we're going to regress.
But yeah, but that's the thing. With every step of progress, that progress freaks some people out so much that they feel like the only response is not to conserve, but to drag shit back. Because conservative would mean like,
yeah,
let's just keep things the way they are. No, they want to go backwards.
And you see a lot, like if 2020 was Star Wars A New Hope, then 2021 and possibly 2022 is going to be Empire Strikes Back. Because you took down the Death Star, you took down Trump, right? He's as big as the Death Star. But then you got like the underlings that come in and like, you know what? It's revenge time, bitches.
Shit. I was CRT hoping back. Trump was the Empire Strikes Back from Obama. I was thinking Obama was the new hope. If Biden is the new hope, then I have very little. This is a very sad moment.
I think Biden would be Return of the Jedi, because A New Hope. Yeah, because Return of the Jedi.
And also, he does kind of look like Darth Vader when you take his helmet off. You know what I mean? I just want to see.
He looks like Darth Vader got plastic surgery done. Had a few procedures.
Side note: you know what would have been a great ending to Return of the Jedi? Would have been like if Luke took the helmet off.
What?
And it was James Earl Jones under there. No!
Bro. Someone should do it. I'm pretty sure someone.
I wish they would, man. I wish they would.
But yeah, it's I look at that CRT debate, the way people are acting at these school meetings about masks, the mask mandates that are being proposed, the way... Like, I understand the hesitancy against getting the vaccine. I truly understand it. And I understand why there are a lot of people that, you know, don't trust the government or don't trust certain people in the government. I understand. I sympathize. But at some point, you know, you have to really, really examine the decisions you make on a day-to-day basis and have an honest conversation with yourself to say, am I making a lot of sense? Like, does this really make, like, Joe Rogan got sick recently, right? You know, and there's a lot of, and Joe Rogan is very influential. A lot of people don't realize this. Like, I didn't realize this. Iza Islam, which is like one of the big dudes in the Nation of Islam, you know, who's goes around on these, you know, talk radio shows and does speeches around the country. He was posting Joe Rogan clips. You know, not to show, hey guys, this, don't listen to this guy. He's not a medical expert. You know, he doesn't have a degree. Don't get advice from him. But to say, hey, listen, we don't need the vaccine. Listen to what Rogan is saying. And I'm like, and then as soon as he gets the virus, you know, this dude takes every drug that he can except for the vaccine. And it's like, what happened to diet and exercise?
Joe Rogan is essentially for white men what Oprah Winfrey used to be for white women. You know what I mean? He's like their messiah, you know?
Yeah, basically. That's who he's become.
And it is funny because everything has become so politicized, you know, even the vaccine, which could easily, if you could imagine, just be a public health issue. Everybody wants to be healthy. Everyone in the public wants to be healthy, right? Why couldn't it be that? But it's become so politicized. It's almost as if like people just, an issue comes out and the left and the right decide what side they're going to be on it and stick to it no matter what new information comes in. And so, I mean, if we got real smart, we would just like take the other side of the issue and then wait for the right to react and do the opposite thing, you know, like, just be against vaccines and then watch people, hey, what do you mean? Watch the religious right. No, vaccines are here to save our lives. God wants us to live. You know, God wants us to protect each other. You know, we're supposed to have compassion. They find all these ways to galvanize against the issue. But everything is politicized now, and it's unfortunate. because it's, you know, people's lives that are at stake. And at this point, things are so fractured that it's like people, whatever, people on a specific side of the fence. So there are anti-vaxxers that want vaccinated people to die. That when a person who's vaccinated has some kind of horrible reaction because they're allergic or whatever, the people who are against the vaccines are happy. They're like, look, see? Likewise, when Joe Rogan got sick, he's been talking about like being against the vaccine, this particular vaccine. People who are pro-vaccine got happy. I hope he dies. That'll show him, you know what I'm saying? This is where we're at. And that's scary because, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, we're talking about America, it's supposed to be one country. Just go ahead and make it two if it's going to be like that.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. It's never been one country. It's never been that way. And so what you had in the past, the reason why I can see someone agreeing with you about, you know, not being too cynical about America, you know, falling is because, you know, we've seen this many times before. We've seen these fractured lines of division that come about. And normally they're centered on race. You know, after slavery ended, you had Reconstruction, which was basically regression, right? It was like, oh, we can't go back to slavery, but we got to create something else because we can't have Black people on par with white people, which is one of the things that ignores Jim Crow so much, right?
Because it was like Reconstruction.
No, Reconstruction. So during Reconstruction is when you had the development of the Black codes, which eventually became Jim Crow, right? First, you had to also the rise of the KKK during that time. So you've had basically a reformation of the power structure, because during Reconstruction, at the same time, you had the politics and the terrorism. You know, you also had Black people, mainly slaves, who had the knowledge and the experience, the skills, right? So they use the knowledge and skills they had to start producing income and creating cities, schools, libraries, and of course businesses for themselves, right? This true evolution of
and Black taking positions of power, promise, like you obviously, you know, seeing what the first Black senators, you know. So like Reconstruction was kind of like, well, okay, we're gonna find ways to kind of integrate Black people into, you know, the American way of life. And then Jim Crow all of a sudden was like,
well, no, you had, when you had these, you had Black people getting into power, you had people, you know, of the old Confederacy that was like, this cannot happen. I know there's no way in hell this is going to work. And so you kind of had the North kind of give in to the sympathies of the Southern whites. And that's kind of what, you know, what led to the formation of a lot of the racial caste systems that exist today, you know, not just with African-Americans, but you also had the situation with the Chinese immigrants in the West Coast, you know, that were eventually deported entirely. And so what you're seeing now is you're seeing a fear, because now, according to the census data, we see, one, the white population as it is now falling, and we see a rise in minorities. And so there's always been this fear that, you know, you're going to have minorities overtake the majority. But I think more so now you have this realization that's going to happen in a lot of people.
Which is their own damn fault for making it so hard to be white. This is the one drop rule. You know what I'm saying? White people can't fuck nobody and still be white. You know what I mean? It's like, you guys have sealed your own fates by making it so hard to be white. It's a recessive trait. Whiteness is a recessive trait. But y'all are superior. Fine. It's a recessive trait, but y'all are superior. Okay, fine. Because that happens in nature. What's that other recessive trait that's dominant, that's better? It doesn't exist. Oh, my God. Anyway, sorry. Whiteness is fine.
I mean, of course, you can always just, you know, like they did with the Irish and Italians, you can change the definition of whiteness, right? Because, you know, it was a time where Italians and the Irish were considered white, you know, when they started coming over and they needed some unity, you know, especially when they were having those labor union battles and things of that nature, they needed some help. So they was like, all right, Italians,
Irish, so you're with how us long before they now. Make you're Mexicans white? What do you think? How long?
Oh, it's already started, man. It's already started.
The Cubans will be like the first ones in the door, and then they hold the door open and let the come on, everybody who's not black, get in here. Come on, let's go. Everybody who's not black. Everybody's not black. Come on, come on, come on.
You know, I think people think that Latinos don't all have their own racial history. People forget Europeans came over here and created the colonies that became the countries that they are. Mm. Europeans, people from Europe, right? Just because you speak Spanish don't mean that you don't have European ancestry. Where did Spanish come from? Yeah. Where did Portuguese come from? You know, so you know, you've always had. I feel like there's in countries like Colombia and Mexico, you have this history of racial intermixing. Also, you know, Mexico had a half black or part black president that basically outlawed slavery, abolished slavery in the state, which led to a lot of, you know, American slaves escaping down south. But that's another point. When we do our history podcast, we'll talk more about that. But basically, yeah, you're going to see a shakeup and racial dynamics in the states. Like you're going to see that, but more so, I'm not sure that's going to be able to happen with the amount of divisions that you have. Like, you know, you have among the left-right division, you also have racial divisions. You have class divisions. You have divisions based on whether you're gay or not, or your views on trans issues. So you have all these other divisions, class divisions, of course, and again, race divisions with, you know, that are connected to class divisions.
Hashtag intersectionality.
Exactly. And that's a big topic that needs to be talked about, because there's a lot of issues that are not going to be resolved because people are not looking at these issues that we do have in a very nuanced way. There's an immediate need to kind of just left, right, everything.
Yeah, you know, and it could be that people are going to figure it out. Could be that the cream will rise to the top. There's always gulags and re-education camps. There's something that can be done with these people. You know, being in Vietnam, you know, I've learned some things. No, I don't know. At the end of the day, I try to hope that with every generation, we get a little bit wiser, we get more compassionate. And that what we're seeing now is the death rattle of a lot of hatred, a lot of division that's been sown into the fabric of America, you know. But there's a part of me that hopes that the reason it's coming to a head so much now is because it might be on the way out. And with each generation, I think there's a little bit more hope that might be true. So we shall see. But I'm gonna be looking at it from over here, though. I'm gonna be watching from over here. Just like, work that out. Hey, you know, I believe in you guys. Go ahead. Go make it happen. I'm going to be here drinking my coffee.
Hey,
you can do it. America.
Because this is a question that, you know, we've gotten before, transitioning back. Could you transition back?
I guess I could, you know. I could probably ride a big wheel again, but that doesn't make it something I'd want to do, you know. I mean, there'd be a lot that I would miss, like feeling free, like the actual feeling of being free. Okay. You know?
So you're going to miss that liberty.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? I live in a communist country, but moving back to America, I would miss the freedom, not, you know, the economic freedom.
Yeah.
You know, just not feeling like I have a target on me, which I do sometimes, you know, which I literally do sometimes. I've had the police roll up on me because of expired tags with their guns drawn, yelling at me, you know, yelling different things. One of them yelling, take your key out of the ignition. The other one yelling, keep your hand on the steering wheel. Like, real shit that's happened. I've never felt that kind of just wonder, am I going to be okay out here? Just the day-to-day life is just way less stressful. You know, not for nothing, but I know when I go back to the United States, when and if, not everybody's going to be happy I'm there. You know, not that everybody's happy that I'm here, but it's not as visceral, and it's not as entrenched in these, like, really these old divisions. So that'd be a bitter pill. That'd be a bitter pill to swallow to have to go back. But I could do it. I'm sure I could do it. And I'm sure I'd be better at it than I was before, just with the knowledge that I've gained, you know, being an expat. But it doesn't sound attractive to me right now.
No, I 100% understand where you're coming from. For me, the gun violence, like being abroad, not having to worry about someone coming into the store trying to shoot up everyone, just not having to like worry about someone carrying a gun and if they're going to shoot someone. It's just, I don't want to have to go back into that. Once you've lived without having that concern, not having that anxiety, you don't want to willingly go.
Because you're from Texas. If we could just put that on there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm
right. You would see guns like all the time.
Yes. I wouldn't move back to Texas though. I don't understand. I like guns. And the only reason I would get one is because everyone else has one. But I don't want to live in a society where that I feel I need to do that. And since I have the choice to live where I want to live, I'm going to choose to live in a society where that's not something that I have to always be concerned about. The infrastructure of the states, you know, if I'm going to be living in a society where I'm paying the amount of taxes that I would have to pay, there should be better public transportation. And, you know, after living in Korea, living in Japan, living in China, you know, three different nations in which I didn't need a car to go from point A to point B. You know, if I, you know, had classes at school and I lived far away, I could take the train or a bus to get there. I don't want to go back to having to spend extra money to buy a car, then spend money to buy the insurance, then also have to spend money for the maintenance of the car every month. That's unnecessary. The health care, that's another thing. Imagine how expensive it would be living in America going through this pandemic if you caught COVID. Those would be some pretty big factors for me. I would have to get over those in order to move back. And I don't think I'm at that point in my life where the quality of my life now is so bad that I feel I would need to move back despite those situations, you know, lingering over my head, creating extra anxiety for me.
How do you, I have a question for you. How do you respond? Because I'm sure you've experienced this when you talk to local Vietnamese folks, for example. Do you ever find that they're like, wow, you left America to come here? Why'd you come here? Like, you coming from like the ultimate place. How do you respond to that? Or is it just what you just told me?
I feel like people don't understand. The people who ask those types of questions are people who never really lived in the States. Because there's a lot of Vietnamese people who lived in America and then willingly moved back.
Right? But I mean the other people that have never been there and have an ideal of what it is.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that? Yeah.
My answer to them, you know, just give them a clear, straight answer. Like, the quality of my life is better here than it was in the States. Did I have more money? Yes. Did I have a car? Yes. What did I have more options of food that I could eat on any single day? Yes, yes, yes. Did we have a Walmart?
Yes. Well, the options are there, but can you eat it? You know what I'm saying? I couldn't eat sushi every week, you know, in America. You know what I mean? If I lived there, I mean, not where I was at.
True. Yeah.
Financially, I couldn't eat out every day. You know what I mean? I can do that here.
But basically, the things that you care about that are important to you, that improve your quality of life and your well-being, you know, which place gives you that? There are a lot less things I have to worry about. Like, you know, I'm not fluent in Vietnamese. So if someone says something about me, I don't know about it unless someone tells me about it. Right. And ignorance is bliss, and it's what I enjoy. But in the States, when I'm getting hit with racism, I know what it is. I know what it is. It's not, you know, people come out here and a lot of times they experience, you know, the more in your face, you know, that old 1950s style. Mm-hmm. Oh, we don't serve your kind here. He makes, or we don't hire your kind here. That type of racism. Whereas in the States, you're experiencing something that's built into the system, like cops just perceiving you to be a threat. And so therefore treating you as one when you know for a fact that you're not, and you still don't understand why you're getting pulled over. It's the level of stress and anxiety I think we feel. And not just us, a lot of people, especially minorities, those, you know, who are Black trying to escape poverty. You know, you have the anxiety of people who look like you not necessarily doing their best job and putting their best foot forward, may engage in violent interactions with you. And you also have to worry about the police officers. You also have to worry about, you know, a million other things. I think it's just the quality of your life, what place gives you the better quality of life.
And if you don't like it, you want to go to another country, it's like a 2-hour plane ride. It's right there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
When you need a break. You know, you need a break. Need
the,
to
like,
take
and
a vacation,
there's many
go
countries
else,
to choose
man.
From. They're right next door, you know. You in America,
exactly.
You got Canada, you got Mexico, and the Caribbean, which are fine places. Which are fine places, you know what I mean?
They are. They
I wouldn't.
Are.
I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go to Canada on a vacation. I would go to visit my family, but I would. I wouldn't. I ain't going to America light. Like, what am I doing that for? Shout out to my Canadian friend. What's up? Shout out Aunt Renee.
Way too cold
there in Montreal.
You're, the weather up there sometimes is a little bit too cold for me. But yeah, I definitely visit. Love to visit. All right, guys. Well, if you ever have some questions for us or you want to know something, more information about something that we were talking about, or, you know, if you want to hear us talk about a topic, make sure to post your comments below. Interact with our Facebook page. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and our IG account. And we will see you guys next time. If you're listening to us on Spotify, Anchor, or any other podcast application, we will talk to you next time.
He'll talk to you. I ain't talking to you. Nah, folks, I'll interact with you. Come on, let's talk. Let's chop it up. Come on, folks. Hit me up. Peace out, y'all.
Peace.